We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on hot topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Black Tech Green Money isn't just about telling the stories of successful black entrepreneurs. It's also about giving actionable and wealth-building strategies that help you protect the future of our communities. That's why we're pleased to be supported by State Farm Insurance. State Farm also believes that we must invest in our communities to achieve economic growth by sponsoring programs like the AXO, which rewards high school students for their academic achievements. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey, everyone. It's our favorite time of the year here at The Black Effect. We're heading to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival, and we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready. And remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Wake that ass up.
Early in the morning.
The Breakfast Club.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Charlamagne Tha God. We are The Breakfast Club. We got a special guest in the building.
Yes, indeed.
We have Nicole Avant. Welcome.
Thank you.
How are you feeling this morning?
I feel so happy to be in New York. Honestly, because my parents just rolled in New York and met here. And my mom grew up here. And I just feel Clarence and Jackie everywhere.
Ooh.
Yeah, I do. I feel, I woke up this morning, I'm looking at the city, I'm like, all right, mom. All right, dad, let's do this.
Did you always have that connection with New York?
Yes.
Okay.
Always. Yeah.
Why? Because of the story of
being here and, you know, I was actually conceived in New York and then they moved to LA. Mm-hmm. And yes, I'm an LA girl, but we always spent time here. Oh, my cousins are here. So Jamaica, Queens and New Rochelle and, you know, Harlow. I got people all over in New Jersey. And so I just love New York.
How do you know you was conceived here? That's not something most kids know. Like, did you ask those questions,
or you just my mom, you did the timeline, like, well, yourself? I did the timeline, okay. And I thought, okay, by the time you moved to LA,
okay,
I was like, you were pregnant when you moved to LA.
Got you.
You know, I was like, okay, so I'm a New Yorker.
Got you. You're a New Yorker. I love that.
Well, this is Nicole Avant, the daughter of the legendary Clarence Avant, the legendary of the legendary daughter of Jacqueline Avant, and she wrote a book, Think You'll Be Happy, and you know how I feel about your father. I've told you that a million times. I got the opportunity to tell Mr. Clarence himself. He's one of my top four inspirations ever in this entertainment business. Mm-hmm. Like, he was the guy.
Thank you for saying that. He really was. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's stealth. Mm-hmm. I've never seen, I mean, he was 92 when he passed, and that man going through his whole life and documenting his life and looking at everything, I said, you had a million opportunities to quit. And would have every reason to quit. And no one would have ever judged you. Mm-hmm. And he looked at me like, why would you? You don't quit. You don't get to quit. You could pause. You could pivot. Mm-hmm. But no. Like, your life is your life. What, you don't know how long you're going to be here. And his whole thing is like, you come with a number and you end with a number.
That's right.
So what are you going to do with your dash? That was it. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do with your life? And it wasn't about fame for him. His whole thing is, you know, greatness is very different from being famous.
That's right.
And a lot of people now, the new generations are thinking, oh, if I'm famous, I'll be great. No, you're great and you're worthy and you're valuable just because you're alive. You don't have to have a title to be great.
That's right.
You know, or worthy or important or significant.
That's right.
You know?
Absolutely.
So that's what I'm feeling a lot. That was his whole thing, even when he was passing away and as, you know, his last days with me. It was, you know, his last words basically were like, keep your mind right, girl.
Wow.
Keep your mind right. I said, okay, Daddy, I will. I promise.
That's going to be the name of the book when you write Clarence's book, Keep Your Mind Right?
Yes, yeah, Keep Your Mind Right. Okay. Yes, and with all his isms.
Okay. Because this book is Think You'll Be Happy. Let people know why that title is so important.
Yes. So Think You'll Be Happy, Moving Through Grief with Grit, Grace, and Gratitude. I was already writing a book in 2020 after I did The Black Godfather. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to write a book maybe based on the themes of The Black Godfather, which were, I picked three themes, grit, grace, and gratitude. Mm-hmm. And then I'm writing it in a couple of drafts and they weren't right. Nothing was landing. And then this tragedy, you know, my mom is killed during a home invasion. And I'm like, oh God. And I thought, well, I have this book that I was writing. Well, I'm not putting this out. How are you going to put out a book on grit, grace, and gratitude after this? Mm-hmm. But my father was like, mm-mm. No, you don't let anyone take your life. You don't let anyone stop you from doing what you're supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. So I said, yeah, but Dad, it's called Grit, Grace, and Gratitude. And then Think You'll Be Happy. Those were the last words that my mom said to me at 8:00 that night. So we were texting about a sweet potato pie. And she said, you know, because my dad, typical Clarence, they came for Thanksgiving the week before. Mm-hmm. He took his leftovers and we didn't even get to the pie that my mom brought for me. And she was so proud that she brought me this great pie and he took it home. So every day after Thanksgiving, she's like, come get your pie. Come get your pie. And I said, Mom, you and this pie, it's okay. And then she texted me that night at 8:00 and we went back and forth about the sweet potato pie. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'll come get it tomorrow. I'll think about it. I'll come get it tomorrow. She said, okay, think you'll be happy. Never saw her again.
Wow.
Never heard from her again. And so when that happened, I thought, you know what? And then we looked at, when I was showing my publisher, my team, the last text, they were like, that's the title of the book because your mom actually didn't just say, think you'll be happy about a sweet potato pie. You know, energetically and spiritually, that was your mantra to go forward in life. That was your mantra to go, because my mom was a big believer on your words and your actions and your thoughts will create your life. Mm-hmm. It just can't change. We see proof of that every single day. Mm-hmm. So I was like, right, think you'll be happy. Okay. I'm going to do this. Like, and I'm going to move through my grief.
I was going to ask, how long did it take and how difficult was it?
Oh, it was... So I started writing right after I finished writing after she passed. So, you know, a year and a half, 2 years, all together 3 years. And it was difficult to write because it was reopening the wound. Kind of felt like salt going back into the wound. But it was also the most cathartic thing I could have ever done because I was able to share stories and remember stories about her that did make me happy, that did make me grateful that Jacqueline Avon, Jackie A, you know, that's what we used to call her, Jackie A, was my mother. And she really took pride in raising her children and supporting her family and loving her family. And she loved history, all history, but especially my history. She's like, you need to know who you are before you leave this house every day. So she had this thing, and we called it the Great Wall. It was letters and anything from Booker T. Washington to Ida B. Wells to Harriet Tubman to George Washington Carver and Hank Aaron and so and so. So she's like, so politics, you know, sports, entertainment, literature, art, you're going to see the greats. Josephine Baker, there was not a day where I didn't walk out of my house where I didn't look at Josephine Baker or Ruby Bridges. You know, my mom's whole point is like, so when you go out in the world, you will understand who you come from.
That's right.
What stock do you come from? And then so no matter what comes against you, you'll know the truth of you owe these people a life. Mm-hmm. You know, you owe people, these people could have quit and could have taken their own lives, and they fought, and here you are.
Mm-hmm. Doing this book also had to be tough because you're honoring your mother with this book, but then the late, great Clarence Avant passed away. So how have you been navigating that?
You know, it was the last 20 months. So when my mom, when we left the hospital, so my mom, you know, she was shot. She was shot in the back. She made it to the hospital. She did not die in her house. She made it to the hospital. She, you know, was in surgery. You know, they did what they could, but she, you know, she lost way too much blood. From that moment, I looked at my father right when they gave us the news. I said, okay, you're coming home with me. We were all shocked, trauma, stress, all that. And I just said, come home with me. And then for the last 20 months, I said, okay, you're going to be my road dog. We're just going to hang. We're going to be together. I'm not going to leave you. You're not going to leave me. And we're going to get through this shit as best as we can.
You,
I don't even know what
daughter.
That, I don't even know what it looks like, daddy. Yeah. I was like, but we're going to get through it. And he would catch me sometimes. He's like, get out of that quicksand. Cause I could see you just spiraling. And he was so great because he was still Clarence. And he basically was like, some days he didn't even say killed. He never even used that word. He would say, when Jackie disappeared, the day Jackie disappeared, because it was so, you know, what?
Mm-hmm.
But to have him for 20 months living under my roof with my husband, and we just decided, okay, our intention with him is he's going to feel safe, he's going to feel loved, and he's going to feel secure. And it was the best 20 months I actually could have ever had because, yes, I grew up with him, but I left home at 18, mm-hmm. never really came back home, would spend time with him, but he was busy. Clarence Avant was doing things. And so I never really had all his energy to myself anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so now as an older man and a wiser man and a calmer man, I received so much more wisdom. And it was just, out of a tragedy, that was the best thing that could have happened, was that I got to live with Clarence again.
Did you kind of feel like he was transitioned soon? Because they always say when couples have been together that long, mm-hmm. when
I
one
love
goes...
that you asked that question.
Mm-hmm.
I swear to you, the first 3 weeks, I kept thinking, oh my God, we probably have 3 weeks with him.
Wow.
We probably have 2 months with him.
Wow.
Because to your point, mm-hmm. all science shows, everybody shows, like, oh, usually if a spouse dies, especially at an older age, the next one goes right after.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And within 6 months. And I thought, oh my God, how am I going to go? How are we going to do this? And then 3 months would go by. Then another 3 months would go by. And by the time we got to 9 months, I looked at Ted and I said, he's Clarence Avant. I don't know what to tell you. I said, now I understand why they call him the Godfather. Like he would always say to me, I'm going to live as long as I can.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's time for me to go, he literally read the New York Times obituary column every single day. And he'd read about other people's lives. He mm-hmm. loved it. And he was like, I'm making sure I'm not in here. I'm just making sure I'm not in here today. And then I would say to him, I teased him and I said, one day, I go, Daddy, when you do go, you're going to have the whole page. And he goes, oh, Nicole, please. They probably won't put me in there. I maybe have a little paragraph. And when he died, the New York Times gave him the whole back right. page. And I went, there you go.
That's right. Now we know grief isn't linear. And the thing I love about your book is it feels like everything your mother and father instilled in you helped you to be able to navigate
this.
Yeah.
100%. And it's not linear. It's like a roller coaster.
Mm-hmm.
Grief is just, some days you're good and you're like, oh, I got this. And then a song will come on the radio. I mean, my mom loved the Spinners. You know, she loved easy music. You know, mm-hmm. she loved the Commodores and the Spinners and Al Green. Any of those guys came on the radio, I was just destroyed for those 5 minutes of that song. Bill Withers would come on, and I think of my mom. And grief just, it's waves. But it also hits every single human being on this planet. No one gets to escape grief. Grief is different for everybody. But the thing that helped me be calm or calm me down about it was when I got anxious was I am not the only one who's grieving today.
That's right.
I'm not the only one. There are mothers who are burying their children around the world. There are mothers in a children's hospital, right? Who work in three jobs their five-year-old has leukemia, and that's grief. Your dog dies, it's grief. Mm-hmm. You know, your grandparents die, whatever mm-hmm. it is, or sometimes it's not even a death. You're fired from a job that you loved and you gave so much of your efforts and you were just, you don't know what happened. Grief is hard, but it is, you are able to move through it.
Now, I want to talk forgiveness and faith, right?
Yes.
Now, you talk about that a lot in the book, and that's very difficult for most people to forgive. And especially with something like that, you kind of lose a little bit of faith at first.
Oh, mm-hmm. 100%.
So how did you get that faith back, if you ever got it back? And let's talk about forgiveness.
Yes. Good question. So my faith in that moment, it's interesting. When it happened, I walked back to my car. My Ted and my father left the hospital separately. Mm-hmm. I had my own car. And immediately, the first scripture that came to me, I am strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. I am strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. I just kept saying it over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, wait a minute. No, actually, no. Right? I'm not strong in the Lord. Like, where is everybody? Mm-hmm. Like, where was anybody for my mom? You know, you definitely go there. But then I snapped right back into it. Like, no, you know what? Faith isn't about, you can't just say, I have faith when everything is going right. Faith isn't for when everything is going right. Faith is for when everything is going wrong, actually. Mm-hmm. It's easy to trust God when everything's great.
Right.
It's very difficult to trust the universe and the divine when things blow up. But people have been doing this since the beginning of time.
That's right.
They have kept their faith. And the only reason we're all sitting here today is because people kept their faith in God. And planted seeds for us, right, to have freedom, to live the lives that we want to live while they weren't living in freedom. So if they can do it, and unfairness can come to them, and trauma can come to them over and over, physical, emotional, spiritual trauma, then I'm going to have to kind of tap into that energy of other people who've also gone through this and make a decision to stay in faith, even though I didn't feel like being in faith. Mm-hmm. I just made a decision. I just came home and I said, okay, God, I don't understand any of this. I don't know what to do with this. I don't know who to call. I don't know what book to pick up. And then it was, you know my scripture. You know what I say. And the birds are going to wake up tomorrow and the sun is going to rise tomorrow and the sun's going to set tomorrow. So this is a part of life. Death is a part of life. Mm-hmm. How we die, we don't know. And then, you know, and then in the book, I write T.D. Jakes. I mean, it's a true story. I literally walked up in my room and I fell to my knees like, God, this is not happening. And the phone rang and it's a no caller ID. And I'm thinking, oh, hold on. I didn't know who it was. I didn't know if it was a detective or somebody. And he said, is this Nicole? And I said, yes. He said, this is Bishop T.D. Jakes. I said, oh my God, well, I just fell to my knees. He goes, how are you holding up? I go, I just fell down to my knees. He goes, well, then good. We're going to pray.
That's right.
And he did his thing. Mm-hmm. And then he said, tell me why you're angry. What you're angry about. I go, well, obviously what I'm angry about. I'm angry that someone did this. I'm angry about this. I'm mm-hmm. disappointed. And he said, okay, now, are we going to give this moment of 5 minutes? Are we gonna focus on your mom's 81 years of her life and what she gave and what she did? Or are we going to give this fool 5 minutes? Where are you going to go? Because if you don't turn your mind quickly, this is going to be a disaster. And mm-hmm. I said, I want to focus on the 81 years. And then the forgiveness part was the hardest because, you know, forgiveness is a hard word and it's a tricky word. And I think a lot of people say, I could never forgive that. Because I've said that too, which means I could never condone that. But forgiveness isn't condonement. It's never, ever, ever condoning a bad behavior. Mm-hmm. Ever. I forgave so that I could have peace in my heart. I forgave for myself. Mm. I was like, okay, I give up the anger and the frustration and the sadness and the disappointment. I give it up. I give it back to God because these burdens that he keeps saying, you know, give me your burdens. I go, okay, well, here are mine because I'm pissed off and I'm disappointed. And I'm so just take all this. And every day I had to do that. But I definitely made sure I didn't care about this person. I didn't care about his name. I didn't care about his past. I didn't care. I was like, I'm not giving him if any space in my brain or my heart, because I don't have a bitter heart. Mm-hmm. I never had a bitter heart. But if you don't forgive, you will have a bitter heart. And again, to anyone who's listening, it is not about even reconciliation. I've forgiven people in my past, like friends who have hurt me. I never reconciled with them. I just forgave them. That was it. Mm-hmm. It was like, I don't want to carry any weight in my body or carry the poison of unforgiveness, because it's not going to bring my mom back.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
It's not going to bring Jackie back.
I don't think forgiveness is linear either, though.
Yeah. Oh, it's not. Yeah. Oh, no. Oh, no. Forgiveness is like all up, right, down, around. Saying. Oh, no. It's not like, oh, I forgive and it goes away.
Yeah.
It's like I said it to somebody recently. If you have like a pure white washcloth and it's dipped in tar, right? Mm-hmm. And you got to go back with that washcloth and try to clean it off. It takes a long time. That's forgiveness. Forgiveness is an everyday thing. I mean, sometimes I just universally, I'm like, I forgive everyone and everything. Before I go to sleep, I forgive everyone and everything. And if I've done anything to hurt anybody, I ask that I am forgiven for everything mm-hmm. that I have done consciously or unconsciously.
So what if you, in your mind, you'd be like, I forgive him. Then you'd be like, fuck him.
Yeah.
I feel like God knows your heart.
Oh,
God
100%.
God knows you're doing your best.
100%. Yeah. I was like, I'm not trying to create any more karma mm-hmm. at all. So mm-hmm. my whole thing is like, I want justice to be served. That was my whole thing. I'm not trying to get back at anybody. Oh, I want this to happen to somebody's family. I'm not even about that. Justice be served. That's the piece that I'll have for me if I get that. But forgiveness is not linear. You're right. Forgiveness is, and it's hard. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's easier than other times, but mm-hmm. it is throughout scripture and most scriptures throughout history because of this reason. And it's for us. It's not for the other person. And I think that's why forgiveness is talked about in all the good books so much, because mm-hmm. You could be really bitter, or, you know, my friend's mom was a survivor of the Holocaust, and she said to her, the one thing you owe me, and she was a child when she was in the Holocaust, like mm-hmm. 4 or 5. And she said, you owe me a life. Mm. That's what you owe me, a life. You owe me a life. That's it. But you got to give me a life, because I survived so that you could be here. And that always stuck with me. That, mm. you know, my grandmother was like that. My grandmother was like, we were born into, you know, slavery. All of us like this. You owe us a life.
Yeah.
Shit, go do something.
You know what I thought about in the book, too, because you talk about how, you know, the person who, you know, mm-hmm. took your mother's life was somebody that your mother would have helped. Mm-hmm. So it made me wonder. I wonder what Miss Jackie would have wanted for this young man in a situation like this.
Yeah, I think Miss Jackie definitely would for sure want justice, and for sure want to make sure that anybody like this, right? Anybody, male, female, black, white, anybody with any kind of energy that could be reckless or negative or whatever, just please don't be in society, because she would never want this to happen to anybody else.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
That was the whole, my whole thing was, I just want justice to be served so that this doesn't happen to, if I can prevent this to for happening to somebody else mm-hmm. by this person, then that's how I honor my mom. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Absolutely.
And there was nothing else, nothing about him, it's nothing. I don't want to have that. I don't want to mm-hmm. hate. And that was my first prayer. When I got down on my knees, the first thing I said was, God, do not let me hate this person, because I'm already there. Mm-hmm. I'm there. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to hate anyone. And that was not Jackie. Mm-hmm. She didn't hate anyone. She was in the inner city all the time. I mean, I'd be in the back of the car like, why are we going to Watts again? You know, mm-hmm. she said, because they need us. She was around South Central all the time. And she loved doing that anywhere in the world, but especially Los Angeles. She's like, we are going to share your blessings. You should be grateful for your blessings, live out your blessings, enjoy your blessings. But a lot of people miss the second part, which is then also serve and share mm-hmm. your blessings with other people.
That's right.
So then it all goes around, so that it's not, you're not hoarding, oh, this is mine and I earned this, and you know, you go do your own thing. My mom was like, people had to open doors for me. people open doors for your father. Mm-hmm. People open doors all the time. So she believed in a bridge. Mm-hmm. And she believed, you know, we're all going to cross this bridge. And then when we get to the other side, we need to make sure that other people can cross.
That's right.
Now, the phrase, it is what it is. Yes. Break that down.
Oh, Clarence. So one of his isms was, it is what it is. Now, what are you going to do about it? Mm-hmm. And that was Clarence's way of acceptance. Mm-hmm. So his whole thing was, look, Nicole, I'm not trying to be hard. It's not crass. It's not saying, oh, it is what it is. Oh, screw you. He was saying, you have to at least own it and don't pretend this shit didn't happen. It is what it is. So whether it's I lost my job, my wife ran out on me, I got in this car accident, whatever it is, mm-hmm. it is what it is. And then you own it, and then you can make a better decision once you take accountability. It is what it is. Now, what am I going to do about it? So for him, for example, he had Sussex Records. He was super successful. He started then putting his hands in everything. And he was stretched so thinly. Bill Withers hated going to the radio station. He owned a radio station. He got into the oil business. He got into publishing. He got into all these things. It was too much for him. And he admitted, and I was a little arrogant. So everything crashed. Bill left. He was like, I don't want to be a part of this. I'm leaving Sussex. I'm going here. This didn't happen. All of a sudden, Sussex folded. Radio station folded. Everything. He's in full debt. And he said, I had to look at myself and say, it is what it is. So I screwed up on this, 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 and this. I'm in debt. I owe the government this. The IRS is in my office. Da, 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 da. And then he said, and I looked at myself in the mirror and I said, now what am I going to do about it? And then he slowly but surely started putting the pieces together. Jackie came in and he was a little proud of, you know, asking his friends for help. But my mom wasn't too proud. So she would go drive around with me in the back cars, in the back seat sometimes, going to his friends saying, Clarence does everything for everybody. Where is somebody for Clarence? Mm. He's had a bad break. Mm-hmm. He's been pulling you all up this whole time. And Jerry Moss, who just passed away, the founder of A&M Records, he mm-hmm. was the M and A&M Records, he and Herb Alpert, God bless them, and Joe Smith, different times, but they wrote... They gave my parents seed money to start over. And that's what they did. And then Taboo Records started. And then the first band was the SOS Band. And it was Take Your Time, Do It Right. Mm-hmm. And that was our comeback song in the Avon house. And you know what I mean? My mom played it every day. She was like, this is what I mean. You know, mm-hmm. if you own what it is and you take accountability, you try at least have the intention to start over. Look what happens. Now we got the number one song here. Wow. And then Jimmy and Terry followed that. Then L.A. and Face followed that. And then it was Bobby Brown and Albie Shore, all these people, Whitney Houston, everything followed that. But if my dad had not owned it and owned his mistakes, I mean, he said to me, I said, what happened with the radio station? You had the only black radio station on the West Coast? He goes, I was just arrogant. I didn't want to listen to anybody in radio who knew better than I did. He said, I just thought I'm Clarence Avon. I'm wealthy and successful. I'm living in Beverly Hills. He goes, and then boom, it all just crashed, you know? And so he always reminded me of, you know, I'd call him if I had issues in the Bahamas and the embassy. He was like, Nicole, you cannot make a great decision, which you need to do right now, if you do not accept what it is right now. Mm-hmm. So you need to just say, okay, this doesn't feel right. These people are doing this. This is this. Then go into what are you going to do about it and make a decision.
Explain to the people, what does choosing to swim mean? Not going down.
Oh, not going down with that's dull, Jackie. She, so my mom was big on, she loved the idea of, she's like, look, life is going to, she was like, you know, she's such a philosopher. She's like, life, it's like being in an ocean. Some days are going to be really calm. Some days are going to be rough seas. You never know what you're going to get. We think we do, but we don't. And her whole point is whatever wave comes at you, whatever storm comes, you must make a choice. You have to choose to swim. Just don't go down with the ship. It happens to everybody. You mm-hmm. got to choose to just swim. It's dark. It's cold. You don't know how you're going to get there. She goes, and maybe you don't make it, but at least choose to try to swim. Don't go down with the ship, which is why that was the mantra in my head of every time I wanted to go down with the ship after this, I wanted to go down a lot. Mm. And I was going down a lot. Mm-hmm. And I would hear my mom like, you know, take a nap and rest, but you got to get out there and you have to swim for me. Mm-hmm. You know, swim for me. Swim so that people remember me. Right? Like my dad would say, you know, write about Jackie. I go, I don't know what to write. He goes, write about Jackie. Write about our life. Write about this. Like mm-hmm. it should be, he believed in legacy. You know, that's why he did everything. What he did was he was trying to create legacy, whether it was Hank Aaron or, you know, Bill Withers or anybody. Mm-hmm. Like this is legacy to be passed on to the next generations. Like mm-hmm. we all survive and thrive on other people's legacy. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because you said you never saw your mom after the text, but in the book you speak about seeing her
yes.
spirit.
Oh,
what was that like?
Crazy mm-hmm. and beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, it was on Christmas Eve and it was early morning. And I had gotten up and I was like, oh God, oh my God. And I thought, this is, how are we going to do Christmas? How are we going to do Christmas? Mm-hmm. And I walked downstairs and I found some ornaments that she had and I was putting them on the tree and everything. And then I swear to you, I felt this energy which made me turn around. I go, Mom! And it was like she was standing right there. And then she was gone. Mm-hmm. But she was with me. And I felt her. And I felt her in the room. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, it was probably the first time I really smiled in a couple of weeks. Like I felt a smile. I felt myself smile, and then I knew for sure, because she'd always say, the spirit is everlasting. She always told me that. Energy is real, and the spirit is everlasting.
That's right.
And I knew in that moment, I said, oh, Mommy, okay, you're here, and you are everlasting. Okay, okay. And I remember looking at a spider that I would have usually killed this spider. It was a big ass spider. But my mom always would take the paper, get the tissue, like talk to the insect. And it was Christmas Eve. I go, and in honor of you, I'm not going to kill this spider. But I felt her and I knew she was there. And it was perfect that it was Christmas Eve. And we had the best dinner that night with Clarence. We poured him his wine. Mm-hmm. We played him his music because you had to have Duke on. You had Duke Ellington, Frank Sinatra, Count Basie, Quincy Jones, and he remembered. He's like, I used to go to Birdland, and I was here with Jackie. And then that's mm-hmm. when we realized how the healing was going to start for Clarence was, oh, we're going to play all this music from the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, but mostly the 60s when he met my mom, mm-hmm. when he was in New York, when he was running, and he was learning from Joe, and he was just becoming Clarence. Mm-hmm. It was all that music because, as you know, we all know, with music, it just reignites every memory.
Absolutely.
I mean, I could listen to a song from the 80s. I could tell you what I was wearing, what perfume mm-hmm. I was wearing, who I had a crush on in high school, what car I was in. I went to this football game when this song was playing. I danced to this at the prom. I mean, that's what music does.
Yeah.
So I used music. That was my tool to play it for Clarence every single day. So breakfast, we played Frank Sinatra. Dinner, we were Duke Ellington. You know, then it was Count Basie and Quincy Jones, and it was just, music transformed him.
That's right.
Was this book like a closure for you to get your feelings out, to get everything
yes.
out?
Yeah, it was. It was a lot of crying and a lot of joy at the same time because I really did feel, okay, I do believe that things are in divine. I always pray for divine order, always. And I was like, I don't know how this is divine, whatever it is. So this is what I'm doing. If this is how I'm honoring Jackie in a book first, and then I wanted to become more like her. So I started doing the things that she did. You know, I started reaching out to the community more. I didn't just, you know, write a check. I was like, let me come down and see these kids today. Let me go and deliver these books myself. Let me go to this museum and see this exhibition, what Jackie would have wanted. And then she started to live within me in a different way, mm-hmm. you know? And so, and now kind of with my dad, it's the same thing. I get now what he was doing for Ali and everybody. It was like, we got to put these people on the map so that nobody forgets. We have to create our own legacy like everybody else does.
When you talk about legacy and, you know, the way you speak of the house you grew up in, like, I can't remember what the encounter was. Was the encounter in your house?
Yes.
Or was it in
their house?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was in their house?
Yeah. I'm sorry. My mom? My house.
Okay. So with the house you grew up in, how do you get rid of that? Or do you keep it? Or,
oh, that's
a good
question.
You can't sell it. Like,
I know.
I'm like, you can't sell this house.
It's so funny. In the beginning, everyone was like, you got to get rid of that house. You gotta, I was like, hold on. Let me just hold on. And I went through a lot of things with my dad. And of course, my dad was like, get this to this museum. Get this to the Smithsonian, get this to the African American Museum. I mean, he was, Clarence was like, we didn't collect all this. You know, he said to me, he goes, see, like I told you, you don't take shit with you. Look at all this. She's gone. Everything's here. I'm going to be gone. Everything's here. So we went through his wishes, went through my mom's wishes. Thank God they wrote everything down. They were orderly like that. And then I was like, okay. And then he, so funny you say that. And then he looked at me and goes, I go, Dad, so there's some people who want to buy the house. He goes, don't sell this house. At least not while I'm alive. Don't sell this house. He goes, this is my house. And he ain't taking my house. I ain't letting nobody take my house. I paid for this house. Mm-hmm. This is my house. I've been in Beverly Hills for over 50 years in the same house. And what has come through this house? Mm-hmm. And then now when I look at it, I'm like, every time I go there to talk about selling it, I'm like, I don't think so. I might use it as something else. Like, it's still a mecca of greatness. Yeah. And I'm telling you, I'm not just saying this. I'm not being delusional. When I tell you the energy there is so positive,
I can imagine.
It is the most powerful it's ever been. It's almost like she was struck by lightning and that was it. Mm-hmm. And now the energy there, the hummingbirds are everywhere. The energy, the vibration is high. And there, when I look at it and I look at, like, every specific piece of art of this black artist and Jacob Lawrence when Jacob was just starting, and my parents are like, and Ernie Barnes, everybody, but my parents are like, we gotta support these black artists, and we gotta, you know, and finding letters of like James Baldwin and all these things. It's just, I don't know what I'm gonna do with the house. It's so funny that you said that. Maybe that was my dad giving you a sign like, I'm not gonna sell it. Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Like, they gotta get the book. We can't give them too much.
Oh, no, I do got a couple more questions though. Mm-hmm. Did you ever feel imposter syndrome in any way because you were Clarence and Jackie's daughter, like you were getting opportunities because of them and not you?
I didn't. Only because this goes back to being Jackie. My mom made sure that I worked jobs since I was 13, like 10. I was answering phones, I mean, all the time. But I was 13, 14. I was, you know, she had to, you know, back then you had to sign the paper to allow your child to work at 14, you know, under California law, whatever. I was a hostess. I was a waitress. I sold shoes. I worked at Bullock's.
Wow.
I was terrible at selling shoes because I couldn't put the boots back in the box properly. It's a very hard job. It's particular. Mm-hmm. But my mom's point was, you need to learn how to work on your own and not in a fancy situation. So yes, you will have internships later in life, but you going to work. And you're going to meet people that you would have never met otherwise. And you're going to understand how paycheck to paycheck. You're collecting and you get to put it in a savings account. They don't. And I need you to see this. And she helped me with not having imposter syndrome also because she would say to me and Alex, you do you. Your spirit came to do whatever it's here to do. My spirit, my soul is here to do what it's supposed to do. If you want to be a teacher, great. If you want to be a psychologist, great. If you want to be a journalist, which I wanted to do, great. I'll help you go to school. But she never felt, they never said, you must do what we did and you must stand in our shoes. They were really great at, please go create your own life. Mm-hmm. Please. Like, we gave you life. So we don't know what your life is. And sometimes doors would open and then sometimes they wouldn't, which was great also, because then I would, you know, at 18, 19, I'm like, oh yeah, I'll get this job for sure. And then I didn't. And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. Well, I'm Clarence Avon's daughter. I'm Jackie Avon's daughter. And then my mom said, yeah, no, Nicole. It's the people get to say no. I mean, I've always told this story. I got fired from a job once and I said, can you believe they fired me? Could you believe they fired me? She said, did they fire you? Did you fire yourself? Mm. Did you fire yourself? Because she knew. She goes, you would call me all the time on the big cell phones, you know, the ones that were this big. Yeah. She said, you would call me like, oh, 10 minutes late to work. I hate this job. Oh, my boss is so mean. And she goes, and then you were the first one out. You were the last one to get there. So you fired yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so she helped me with finding my own passion and reminded me and Alex that you guys can do really whatever you want to do. You do not have any pressure from us to feel it, to feel that you have to fill our shoes. Because my dad's like, my shoes are filled. My feet are in them. Like, yeah. He was like, what shoes? He goes, and get in your own shade. He goes, don't follow my shadow. He's like, go make your own shadow. Stop standing behind me.
What do you think the greatest lesson is you learned from your mother? The ultimate one. I mean, it's a lot of them.
Oh, so many. One. That... It's really simple. Jackie Avant really believed in, she loved history and the importance of history and culture, different cultures, you know, learning about different cultures. She hated cultural appropriation. She was like, it's cultural appreciation. What is happening with people? You know what I mean? Like, she loved that, but she gave me this sense of a zest for life. She loved being alive. She believed in hope. She believed in compassion. And she lived a compassionate life. She lived a life of service, and she lived a life of giving and kindness. And the greatest lesson I got from her was, use your freedom wisely. Use your thoughts wisely. Use your words wisely. We're the only creatures on earth that we can release our past, right? We don't have to carry it if we don't want to. You could really try to release it, manage it, something. But we're the only creatures on the earth that actually have an imagination that allows us to create the future that we want. And that was her greatest lesson. Like, do not forget that the power within you is the same power that creates worlds and stars. And you know what I mean? You're connected to the same thing.
That's right.
So that's what she gave me, this understanding of life and understanding of living a worthy life, that, you know, live a significant life.
Is that what you want people to get out of this book by reading this book? The main thing?
Yeah, it's, I want people to really get that, you know, life can be hard and all of us go through trials and tribulations, but we always have a choice on how we're going to deal with those trials and tribulations. And my hope that when people read the book, because it doesn't necessarily have to be about grief. You know, the title is Think You'll Be Happy. So it is a positive book. But I hope they're inspired and motivated and encouraged to live the best life that they can and understand while they're doing that, that they are significant and important and valuable regardless of what their title is. Like, you could still have a meaningful life, and that life is really worth living.
I just got three more questions.
Yeah.
What does Climax, North Carolina mean to you? So that is the birthplace of
Yes. And you know what that means to me? That if you can come out of Climax, you could do anything.
That's right.
If you come out of Climax, North Carolina, you can do anything in the world. If your mind is open and you're prepared, you have no idea what's going to happen, but you can do anything.
That's right.
Yeah.
Who in this industry do you think is close to being the Black Godfather?
Oh, that's a good one. There's a few. You know, it's interesting. Reggie Hudlin, we did the Celebration of Life for my parents just last Wednesday in L.A. And Reggie Hudlin was great. He got up and he said, what Clarence Avant has taught us, the question that we should ask ourselves is, what is your assignment?
Mm.
Clarence Avant understood his assignment. And I think it's anybody who understands their assignment and anybody who opens doors for people or makes connections for people and who is excited to see the magic that happens as opposed to, what am I going to get out of this? That's the next Clarence Avant. Go ahead.
Is there somebody in front of the camera, behind the scenes? Because there's two that come to my mind.
Who comes to your mind?
Tyler Perry.
Absolutely. I was just going to say Tyler. I'm going to see him on Thursday. I was going to say Tyler is probably the closest to my dad in his actions.
Yes.
Because Tyler, and look at his life.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. If somebody had every right to quit, Tyler Perry Absolutely. Had every single right to quit life. Mm-hmm. He had, right? We would all understand, oh, I get why he quit. Mm-hmm. I get why he just threw in the towel. Tyler not only became one of the most successful black men in America, one of them, not just that, he is so focused and so on purpose about turning around and going into every community and was like, if you have the will, I have the way, come on.
That's right.
And I'm going to bring you and I'm going to teach you. And he's disciplined, Tyler. And he has disciples around him, right? And he's teaching always. But the thing I love about Tyler Perry is that he wants to see people succeed. Mm-hmm. He knows the law that there's more than enough for mm-hmm. everybody. And that no one can take from Tyler Perry or take from you or take from you or you or you. Anything that's meant for you, no one can take it anyway. So Tyler, I think, embodies the most of Clarence Avant because he doesn't expect anything
that's
in
right.
return.
That's right.
He does it with this love. You know, Oprah's the same way. Like, they put it out there and then it's like, it's for grabs. But Tyler, for sure.
Yeah, that's it. Would be Tyler, Jay-Z, and probably Oprah for me.
Yeah. 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 Mm-hmm. They're doing it.
Yeah.
And by the way, look where they all come from.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
The best examples of it doesn't proof. Doesn't matter where you start. It matters where you finish.
That's right.
It doesn't matter. And it is a journey. And all journeys are hard, by the way. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You've had a hard time. I don't know anyone on earth who hasn't had a bump in the road mm-hmm. or a hard journey. Some are harder than others. Mm-hmm. I know that. But I think, you know, having role models like that, and I'm working with Tyler now. We're working on a film together called The 6888. It's going to be out next year. It wasn't supposed to be a plug, but I'm going to plug it. Hey. and I think Kerry Washington, she might have talked about it. She was here. Mm-hmm. And it's great. But Tyler and I wanted to keep legacy going. And this is a great American story that just happens to be about an all-female, all-black battalion in the Army and what they did mm-hmm. and how they helped us win World War II. I was like, well, this is an important story. And I called Tyler. I was like, you should do it. Because Tyler gets it.
That's right.
Tyler understands the responsibility mm-hmm. that we have. It's not about just telling stories and being rich and a fancy car and a big house. Tyler understands on a very deep, soulful level that these are ripple effects. When I'm gone, when all of us in this room are gone, that whatever we put out there, it's going to live.
That's right.
Like this book is going to live.
Right. Absolutely. My last question, they always say, don't cry because it's over. Mm-hmm. Smile because it happened. What have you done more of?
Oh, I love that. Far? I laughed.
Okay.
I try to laugh a lot. I watch a lot of comedy. The comedian saved me. Mm-hmm. I was watching Chappelle for the last 20 months. I've never watched so many Netflix comedy specials. Sebastian, Chappelle, Chris Rock, everybody. The laughter mm-hmm. really is a healing balm. Mm-hmm. It really does shift your energy. My heart would break open in different ways. Mm-hmm. And I would go to sleep every night during my trauma and my stress. I would watch comedy before I went to sleep. I needed to laugh before I laid my head down on the pillow. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, the book, pick it up. Think You'll Be Happy.
Think You'll Be Happy, Moving Through Grief with Grace and Gratitude.
That's right.
Nicole Avant. Mm.
Thank you so much for joining us and sharing this story.
I appreciate it so much.
I'm
happy to be here. Thank you.
And it's The Breakfast Club. Good morning. Too.
Wake that ass up early in the morning.
The Breakfast Club.
Black Tech Green Money isn't just about telling the stories of successful black entrepreneurs. It's also about giving actionable and wealth-building strategies that help you protect the future of our communities. That's why we're pleased to be supported by State Farm Insurance. State Farm also believes that we must invest in our communities to achieve economic growth by sponsoring programs like the AXO, which rewards high school students for their academic achievements. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
What's good, everybody? It is our favorite time of the year here at The Black Effect. We're heading down to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival. And we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready. And remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcast festival for more details.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't give Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.